And welcome to 9 to 42, the podcast from the team at the Guitar Show UK. Join us for interviews, updates and chat with artists, influencers and those that manufacture the gear that we love. Hello and welcome to 9 to 42, which is the podcast from the guys at the Guitar Show UK. And in the first episode since the Guitar Show 2024, I'm looking at a de-stressed Jason Hunt. How are you, Jason?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Tired, but de-stressed.
You are de-stressed because you were looking mightily grumpy for a couple of weeks before.
To be fair, I earned my year's salary over 2 days. They have to go well.
You're a bit like Naomi, aren't you? You only get out of bed for a year's salary in 2 days, don't you?
Yeah, well, you always used to, remember mates, when we worked at the NEC. It was like, what's your favourite question to an event organiser? And it's like, what do you do the rest of the year? Mm. Nothing, mate. Nothing at all. It just all happens. No planning, nothing.
I can tell you what you do. You look 10 years younger is what you do for the rest of the year versus what you look like in February.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
For the first one back, after our little kind of break, and by the way, actually, Jace, before we get onto our guest, who's just going to have to sit and wait, unfortunately, that odd little episode that we did of just me and you rabbiting on, that went down ever so well.
Yeah, but let's not do that again, eh?
All right, then.
It's much more interesting with a guest.
With a guest. Okay. Having just come away from the event, which was fantastic, fortnight ago, really enjoyed it. And I was upstairs trying to make the live stage operate on time and had a great couple of days doing it. But my act of the weekend, my artist of the weekend, has actually joined us for the podcast, which I'm quite excited about. And I knew nothing about our guest before that weekend, and he blew me and the rest of the room away, and at which point I found out he was not only a singer-songwriter but a BBC Folk Award winner, which means we have Blair Dunlop with us. Hello, Blair, how are you?
Hello, that's very kind. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, soup, yeah, absolutely. Everything before, everything after.
Thanks for having me on. I absolutely loved the event. Like, I didn't know if I was going to stick around because it was just it's been a really busy period for me because I mean we'll get into it, but I've got a new record coming out and I'm touring and this and that, but I saw it come in and then I like reposted it and then loads of people hit me up like after reposting it, like, oh, you're coming to this, you're coming to that, oh, I was thinking of coming, or I went last year or whatever, and then I thought, oh, I should probably check it out really. So as soon as I got there I was like, well, this is me for the day. And it's a shame it's not going on till midnight. Because it's just, you know, new faces, old faces, great musicians, great gear. And as a gear nerd, as a guitar lover, you know, it was wicked. So thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it. And the live set was really cool. Nice energy in the room and the sound was good. So tick, tick, tick.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I tried to get you a couple of years ago, I think. Mm. I think it ended up being double booked or something because obviously we've got a mutual friend in John that sort of like put you forward. Mm. Bless him.
Yeah, John's a good one. John's my manager for the listeners.
Yeah.
And you work with John, I guess, outside of this. But yeah, he sent it through and I was like, oh, amazing. So you've got me whenever you want me. It was a great opportunity to just like nerd out, really.
Well, this morning John sent through your new album, which comes out May, is it?
Yeah, end of May. Yeah,
I really liked it.
Awesome.
I genuinely really liked it. And what's the song with the radio edit? Sorry, I'm not very good at song titles.
The next single, I think that's "Let's Get Out of the City."
Yes. Great song. Honestly, loved it.
Thank you. Thanks very much. I just filmed the video for that a couple of days ago, and we pulled in a few favours from some old friends, and we had like 12 stuntmen on set, and there's like this office brawl, and then it's going to be like really funny, and like it's going to be a really good video. I've really looked out with the people there. They've called in favours, and yeah, we've got like we had a 15 grand day for like a few hundred quid because of them pulling in favours. But it was so funny, just like people you know, like falling over and fighting, and like we had a stair fall at one point, so I have to throw a duck to someone and he like bins himself down the stairs, and then we just like run through London. Like, it's very funny. So yeah, that's the next single. So yeah, it'd be good to get that one out. And you know, it's been 5 years since the last album, so before then I'd always kind of released every couple of years, tried to keep my hand in, and then obviously COVID came and kind of threw everything off kilter. And And then I released a live album kind of between the last studio record and this one, which was live in Australia, which is cool, but it's, you know, it's not really new material. It was a stopgap, really. I enjoyed putting it out, and that was an amazing tour, but it's high time I got some new music out. So I'm kind of chomping at the bit, really, because it feels like a bit of a reset, what with everything that went on in the kind of meantime. You know, a lot's changed in the industry, in my life. So yeah, it's just good to be doing it again. Yeah.
So is the video thing sort of like a focus for this album? Because I watched the video for the first single, I Want to Be Running, and that's a great video. Are you kind of like doing videos for all the songs now?
So I'm trying to just, you know, it's like, I say the world's changed. Like, the way that we consume music's changed massively. And I hate to say it, but, you know, in air quotes, content is king. And I don't really ever have much of a vision, like, visually for things. Like, I care deeply about the music and the songs. I mean, there's caveats to that because, yeah, I mean, we'll probably get into it. But essentially, obviously, musically, songwriting-wise, performance-wise, like, you know, very in tune with it and have my opinions. But in terms of the visuals, like, it's just not really my bag. I'm not one of those artists like a Björk or a Lady Gaga who, like, has a set, or Tyler, the Creator, like, someone who really understands the visual side of it and the artistic side of videos, photography, images. Like, I've never really had that. So when Hayley came to me, Hayley and Kieran, I mean, me and Hayley are old friends. My best friend used to go to drama school with her, and she's really into kind of music that I grew up on, like your West Coast Americana, like your Jackson Browns and your Bonnie Raitts and stuff. And so we've always had a good affinity, like, artistically. And her and her partner just approached me a few months ago and said, hey, we want to do some videos. And I was like, that's great, I've got no money. And they were like, no, we're starting up our production company, and it's beneficial to us. Like, short form is the way now. Like, that everyone's doing, you know, new directors, new production companies, they invest in music videos and short films. That's the route in. So to have music that we really like with someone who has a background in acting, which we may or may not get into.
Oh no, I've got that written down.
Yeah, I bet you have. Yeah, but it's nice to dust off the old chops, because I've not acted since I was like 11 or whatever, properly, like screen acted. But it kind of felt like it, you know, it was just a marriage of convenience at the perfect time, because that was like 6 months out from the release of the album. Like November. That's like the perfect time. Just got in touch out of the blue, said, let's do some videos on the cheap. We understand that, you know, with the budgets, we'll make it work. And then they did the first video, and they did such a good job on that. I love it. And then this is the main feature video. And then we will do another video for the last single. And then, you know, around that, I've also done some one shots of live performances of the songs, because I love to have live sessions. Like, I always enjoyed watching and listening to live sessions. And as someone who's just like trod the boards and played the folk clubs, played festivals, like just done that my whole life, I want to convey that I can also perform live. So to have some high quality live content leading up to the album is good as well. But never had as much kind of video footage leading into a record, and there is a cost that comes to that, but I think it's almost like a pension, you know, like that footage is going to be up there for the next few years. And like I say, with COVID and everything, there's been a bit of a dearth of like high quality content that's representative of what I do now. because it's been so long since the last record. So I'm just trying to slam it, really. And so that means music videos, live performances, and then clip them up and put them on your socials and stuff. The label told me to get flipping TikTok the other day, so I feel like such a boomer. I'm like uploading it. I don't even know how it works. But, you know, I've got to get on it. You know, I don't want to be... I say old man, all right, I don't want to be early 30s man shouting at the clouds at the way that no one listens to LPs anymore. You know, I can hate it, or I can get on board with it and still ultimately make the music that I want to make and just kind of try and cater to everyone. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to do as much as I can in the run-up to this album.
Quick question about that video. You're playing, it looks like a mandolin, but guitar sized.
I've got it here, actually. It's actually called a mandocello. Is it a tune? I actually put a ding in it in that video. I like someone like left it on the case, like not zipped up, like in the case, but like not properly zipped up. And I, yeah, there's a bit of a ding on it there. I've not had it out since then. I'm kind of fuming that I've got to get it fixed. Play it, but I played it on that song, and it's strung like a mandolin but down an octave. So some people call that an octave mandola, and but it's the shape of a mandocello, which is a bit bigger and down, tuned down to C on the bottom normally, I think. But either an octave mandola or a mandocello, but it's great, it's really cool. I really like it as an instrument, and I've not really had an excuse to get it out. And then me and my partner moved into a new place, and I just thought, we're down in Bristol now, and I'd spent quite a few years trying to get away from the folk scene and kind of folk instruments. Not because I hate it, just because I just kind of shifted a little bit away from that. And then being back in Bristol, there's a really strong traditional folk scene, and my partner's a fiddle player, and you know, I just kind of been like enjoying the acoustic vibe and the session kind of culture down here. So I just thought, yeah, I'll just get the mandocello out. And we live down the road from an amazing luthier. So I thought the neck had warped because I'd not played it for so long, but it just needed a bit of adjustment. And he just sorted it out for me. And then, yeah, just wrote a song on it and thought, yeah, I'm going to stick this on the album. So obviously I had to play it in the video because it's, you know, I wanted it to be the actual instrument that I played. But it's cool. Some people have got in touch about it, like, wow, that's so cool. It's like, it is cool, actually. You don't really see them. I don't know why it's cooler than a mandolin, but it just is cooler than a mandolin. And I love mandolins, but they're not cool, you know.
Oh, I don't know. I quite like my mandolin. I struggle. I have to process my brain and go, it's like a guitar, but it's upside down.
Yeah.
Which is the only way I can figure out what chords are. It's like playing a left-handed guitar, right-handed.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it is a bit, actually. That's an interesting way of putting it. A lot of the shapes do kind of invert. What I like about it is that it's uniform across each string. So there's no, like, G string like there is on the guitar where it's like, oh, fourth fret. It's like...
Yeah.
It's every, you know, each interval is as it is, it's in fourth, so great, happy days. But I need to, like, I haven't played it in months, like, I need to get it back out again, but I've just been cracking on with the guitar. But it's good to write on, you know, I really enjoy writing on something different because it forces you to, like, because you can't express yourself as well as you would be able to on another instrument, it forces you to kind of make do and, like, your brain does a different thing. Like, I enjoy writing on piano as well because I'm not a particularly good pianist, so it means I come up with something different, and then you know, you might take that back to guitar or your primary instrument. But I think that's been really helpful because obviously the mechanics of it are the same, like your fingers are doing that, you know, you use a plectrum on the right hand and you strum, cool. It's just the configuration, the way you put chords together and the inversions and how, you know, how you express yourself using the kind of familiar movements puts your brain in a different place, and then you end up writing a song that you would have never written on guitar for whatever reason. It's just great. That song wouldn't have existed if I didn't pick up that mandocello. I would have written a completely different song, and that's really cool. So I just use that as an excuse to just populate the house with as many, like, needless instruments as I have. Holly's getting a bit annoyed at the minute because I bought a copy of a strap for 40 quid the other day, and I brought it back and I was like, yeah, it's amazing, I'm gonna get the soldering iron out and I'm gonna put a gold foil in there, and it's literally been on the table for like 2 months, I haven't got around to doing it. And she's like, this isn't gonna work, please, just if you're gonna work on something, work on it. Just, but I'm just like a magpie, I'm like, oh, is that, and then
so what are the guitars behind you?
Okay, so I have a, so I was there with Vintage.
Yeah.
So I play my Gordon Giltrat signature, and I absolutely love it.
And Gordon was there watching you, wasn't he?
Yeah, so I dropped him a line because he lives like Sutton Coldfield, I think. And funny story about Gordon, actually. So both my parents are musicians, and my mum, so I just kind of grew up around music, and my mum made a record with Gordon when I was young, maybe like 12 or something like that. And then, but they fell out of touch, and then I moved home for the pandemic. And then mum was like, okay, I need you to, you're good with technology, I need you to list all my items that I don't need on eBay, because my mum's a bit of a hoarder. Sorry, mum, but she's a little bit of a hoarder. So I was like, cool, all right. And she had this instrument called a Bode Psaltery. Don't know if you've heard of it.
No.
Great. Not many people have heard of it. It's kind of triangular, and it's almost like, looks a little bit like an auto harp. It's a weird, weird thing. And there was none on the internet, literally none being sold in the UK. So this was the only one. And I sold it on my eBay account. So it came up as like Blair Dunlop. And that's quite a recognisable name, because it's, there's not many Blair Dunlops about. And it just so happened that that week, Gordon Giltrap was looking for a Bode Psaltery. And he looked on eBay, and he'd not spoke to mum in like, they'd fallen out of touch, like, they'd not spoken in about 15 years or whatever. And he just rang the home phone, which is like, I mean, that dates it, doesn't it? Like, that shows that they were working together when I was young. And he rang the home phone and said, Judy, is your son selling a Bode Psaltery? Anyway, they got back in touch through that, and he bought it, and then we started hanging out kind of between lockdowns, and just lovely to be, you know, to get to know him properly. He's like obviously a master of the instrument, but total legend, really complimentary and supportive of what I do. And we were just hanging out. You know, when you're at Gordon's house, he'll give you a guitar for, you'll be playing it for half an hour, and oh, this is cool, man. Yeah, that's Pete Townsend's guitar. Oh, it's absolutely mad. You're like, okay, go on, you can have that back, because I can't afford to break that. Cool. And he said, how about my signature? And I was like, wow, I didn't know you had a signature. And I played vintage guitars before and thought they were really good, particularly for the value. I always thought they were decent guitars. And he got it out, and I just was playing this guitar for ages. I couldn't put it down. And he said, oh, if you like it, I'll put you in touch with the company, and you can, you know, maybe see if you can get an endorsement deal. So I did that, and I was there with Vintage, and that guitar has been, I've only had it for 2 years, but it already looks like Willie Nelson's guitar, because it's a cedar top, so it's quite soft, and I've never had a cedar top before. And I do play it quite hard, like, on the right hand, there's a kind of, because I hybrid pick quite a lot, so that means that for the chuggy stuff on the bottom, it's, yeah, I've got a, like a bit of a hole forming there. But I was there with Vintage, had a great time with them, and it was great to be with Gordon as well, and you know, he knows the guys there, so it was a nice social thing. And on the back wall on the right, I have a Vintage SG style guitar. So the producer of the new record, Jim Murray, great guy, grew up on his music, like really progressive producer, very forward thinking, in terms of, he takes a lot of traditional English songs but fuses them with, he was like the first to have a grime artist on a trad folk record and electronic elements. But he's a guitar nerd, and we love this particular Canadian singer-songwriter called Kathleen Edwards. She always had an SG sideman for like the first three albums. He's like a different guy, but they always played an SG. And without going too far into it, because it is a bit of a nerd fest, there's a particular amp that's converted out of a film projector, and a lot of LA dudes use them, guys like Blake Mills and Mason Stoops, a lot of the great session, like the new, like young session cool crew in LA use them. And flipping, there's one guy who converts them in Sheffield, and he only made one with a transformer for UK voltage specifically, and he said he'd never do it again because it was an absolute shambles. It was like, took so long. And Jim bought that particular one without a cabinet. It just came up on eBay because he'd had a save search, because he's a nerd like us. And he bought it, made a cabinet out for it, and we used that on the album. And that's actually the kind of signal path that Kathleen Edwards used for a particular album that we love, a Canadian guitarist called Colin Cripps. So as soon as I recorded the album on his Gibson, I was like, well, I need an SG now. I've not got any guitars with humbuckers because I kind of grew up around Strats and Tellys. Mm. So I was like, I need to get it. And then my girlfriend Holly runs a festival, and she, I helped her out. You know, I've been helping her out put the festival on the last couple of years. So as a thank you, she bought me that SG. The vintage SG. So I love that. It's great guitar, and but that's a new addition. The Tele Thin Line there, that's a Mexican Tele Thin Line. First, like, proper decent electric guitar that I owned. Got that when I was in my teens, and then I put a P90 in the neck, and it kind of does everything, that guitar. It chimes. But I love thin lines. If I could have one. I've got a tattoo of a thin line actually on my back. I just love the shape. It's the first electric guitar that I just fell in love with. So that's great. The Gretsch there, I stole, but I was owed money from the guy, like a lot of money from the guy. That's a whole other story. If you want to hear the full story of that, come to one of the shows on the tour, because I'll bring that out and I'll tell it on that. And then the other one is literally, that's just a cheapo Stag Tele copy, like a Cabernet Tele style.
Yeah.
In light blue. It looks so cool. It's kind of sick. And I bought that recently for 90 quid on Facebook Marketplace, like up near Liverpool when I was like driving to the studio. Best thing about being a touring musician is Facebook Marketplace. Like, you could just have that thing set for the whole of the country, because you know you're going to be passing by Bury St Edmunds or wherever. And there's a gold foil pickup in the neck there that I picked up on the road in Australia on that tour that I briefly mentioned, where I released a live record. And I love Rykuda, I love the aesthetic of gold foil pickups. And then I just love the idea that they were kind of microphonic and a bit crap and cheapo in the 60s. But some, you know, they're just really sought after now. But I was expecting it to be rubbish or like not work, because I only recently got a soldering iron, and I'm not like an engineer.
Mate, the first time I built a park caster and soldered it together and plugged it in, and it actually worked. It was like, it's like a t-shirt over the head moment.
Literally, just like, it scored a World Cup final, like, honestly. So that was the first one, and I'd been looking at this. I had a Tesco gold foil and a Diamond gold foil that I picked up from this slide player I was touring with in Australia. This crazy guy, he's like 6'7" guy called Fitzy, with like croc bites everywhere. And he basically collected old amps and old pickups, and loved gold foil pickups. And he just had a box. And so I was over there and I said, I will just take whichever ones you can sell me. And he did me a deal. But I've been looking at those pickups on the mantelpiece for like 3-4 years, waiting for the right vessel to like put them in. And then I just saw that Stag and I thought, sod it, I'm just going to put it in. And do you know what? It actually sounds amazing. Like, it actually, the gold foil pickup, I get it. I get the obsession with it. People say it sounds really open and like clear. It's obviously, you know, they sound stupid, the terms, but it does sound open, and the clarity and like, it is, it's super responsive, and you know, all those buzzwords, but I literally love it. So
I'm really pleased, because I've got what you can't see just there.
Yeah,
I've got I don't know what the correct term is, but it's an acoustic resonator, so not a metal one, a wooden one.
Okay. That with a metal cone in the middle.
With the metal cone,
yeah.
It looks really cool. Picked it up really cheap when I was out at the NAMM show. It only cost 212 quid.
That's good.
But it's not, obviously it's not loud enough for gigging, because it's just an acoustic. Mm. And I was talking to a mate of mine, and he said, because there's not much clearance, and we don't really want to route out part of the body to put a pickup in it, he said, why don't we just put a gold foil on it? because they're really thin as well, and it'll fit underneath the strings. And he says, and you'll get that sort of like Black Keys-y, old school, grungy sort of sound out of it. And I was like, oh, okay, so I'm taking that next week to go and get that fitted.
Oh, great. Okay, that's exciting. That's really exciting. That would work, actually, I bet. That would be, interesting. It would be lively with the metal cone and the gold foil. It would be very zingy, but it would probably sound incredible if you can tame it. I don't know, yeah. That's really cool.
Can I just jump in at this point? Just to check my voice is still working. but B, because we've glossed over this, and I feel somebody needs to actually point it out, and that's in defence of your mum. Because obviously you threw your mum under the bus slightly for hoarding stuff, but can I just remind you, you've got a 40 quid Strat that's been on your table for two months, and apparently pickups just dotted everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have a leg to stand on. What I would say is that it's a professional business expense, you know. I take
that
these
is
out.
Bullshit. That is absolute bullshit.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I'd say there's levels to it. My mum just comes back with like, oh, I've bought a Victorian bureau. Well, where's that going to go? At least a pickup, you can stick it on a mantelpiece. Do you know what I mean? But these were obviously, you see, like we rent, so we shouldn't be doing this really. So every time the landlord comes, we have to like usher him in through the other entrance because I can't have him see that we've like put the guitars on the wall. But otherwise, like we literally have no space. So I've got, stuck them on the wall, and that's a vibe, isn't it? That's the one. I've got rid of all my cases now.
Oh, it looks
great. Yeah, I've got rid of all my cases. I've just like stuffed them at my dad's. And just a couple of cases that I really need. I just bought a case with a soft case, but like a sturdy one with acoustic and an electric slot in one, so I can have both on the back.
Yeah.
And that's been a game changer. I'm looking forward to touring that one and the new tour because, that is a two trips to the car down to one trip to the car kind of. That's a life changer if you do.
I've got one of those. I've got a Gator case that's sort of like bigger on one side, so I can put a telly in one side, and I tend to play like a Gretsch or a 335 in the other side.
Nice.
Which I'm assuming is the acoustic electric kind of backpack that you've got.
Yeah.
And it does make life so much easier, and it's so much lighter than, as much as I worry about headstock brakes and stuff like that, the cases are heavier than the guitars in some cases.
It's that I got to a point where I was like, unless I'm traveling abroad, why am I lugging hard cases everywhere? Like, why am I doing, I'm careful with it. Like, I don't know. And also a lot of my guitars are working, you know, they're 40 quid Strats. I ain't got money. I've got the vintage Gordon Gilchrist one for, you know, cause I got an artist deal on it. I got it for a few hundred quid. That's a guitar that stands up to a lot of handmade guitars, but I know tomorrow I could get one off the shelf again. It's like they're working guitars for me. I'm not precious about putting dings in them. You want them to be played, right? I mean, if I had expensive guitars, it'd be a different ball game. Like the Gretsch, I know is worth a bit. But like
I hope it is, because that's the repayment of debt.
Exactly.
I hope you didn't take a cheap one.
No, I didn't. God, that's another story.
I want to take you back, actually, all the way back. But the only reason I want to take you all the way back is because I was born and raised in Retford.
Okay? Oh, I know Retford.
Yeah, you will do, with where you were born and raised. And my mum's from Sutton in Ashfield.
Yeah.
And the reason why that's relevant is because I can hear bits of North Nottinghamshire, Derbyshire in your accent, which not everybody will have done because you disguise it quite well. But you're from Chesterfield, aren't you, or that neck of the woods?
Yeah, I'm from Chesterfield, and I went to school in Derbyshire. Like people say, Chesterfield's like basically Sheffield, isn't it? But essentially, geographically, like as the crow flies, yes. My mum's on the north side of Chesterfield, so literally up the bypass,
up the bypass, Strongfield.
Exactly, you know. But that's essentially the cutoff between the Midlands and the north, because you go 5 minutes up the road, you're in Yorkshire. And we're in Derbyshire. So I spent a lot more time like Derby, Nottingham kind of growing up. And my manager, John, who I mentioned earlier, he's Shardlow, like Derby outskirts. And one of my mates from school was a big Ram. So that season in the Premier League when they got like 6 points, I went to most games that season. And that, I've always got a soft spot for Derby. So, but yeah, I'm Midlands really. Yeah, Midlands child.
I was at an England game at the old Wembley. So it's a long time ago. So whatever, yeah. 25 years ago or something. Mm. And it's weird, isn't it, when you get to see an England game, because like you all support different teams. And there were some people in front of me, and they turned round and went, "Who do you support?" And I went, "West Brom." And they were like, "Well, who do you support?" "Derby." "It's all right, we like West Brom." And it was just like...
Yeah, funny, isn't it? The England crowd's funny. I used to live right outside the new Wembley for about 5 years. There's a song on the new record, actually, called "Brick on Brick." And then in brackets, very 90s, in the brackets. Yeah, HA9. Yeah, that's about... that was our postcode. It's a Harrow postcode, but... That's about just how it's changed. Like, God, when we moved in, it's... If you look at London from above, or if you're on a flyover, the two places that you'll see cranes are Stratford, West Ham Stadium, and Wembley. And Wembley, in the last... You know, we filmed a bit of the latest video up there, and Hayley used to hang out with me and Hamza when we lived there. Because they all went to drama school together, and she'd not been for about 5-6 years, and she could not believe it. Just prefab everywhere, like student accommodation, da da da. But it's still cool. Like it's got a certain vibe. It's just the home of football, so you can't, if you're into football, like you can't help but be inspired when you just look out the window and you see the arch lit up. It's just cool.
but you're right. So, it's not the same as when it. I mean, if you go back to old Wembley,
yeah, the two towers.
I'm a Sheffield United supporter, so I've seen my football team lose at New Wembley, Old Wembley, and Cardiff in playoff finals. But the first time I remember doing Twin Towers, and you're right, all around that stadium now. It's because I was there last year. Mm. It's totally different now. Mm, it's proper built up. It's proper city. There's that shopping centre next door to it now.
The Wembley retail outlet, would that be?
That probably would be the Wembley retail outlet. Is that on your video?
It's not on the... Well, maybe in the background, but yeah, I bought all of my pants from there for like 20 years.
That's rubbish, though.
20 years, no. Not
20. Took my daughters down to see Harry Styles. Yeah, Harry Styles last summer at Wembley.
Not Redknapp, then?
No, Harry Redknapp would have. I'd have gone in if it was Harry Redknapp.
Yeah.
But me and my wife stayed outside because... I don't care. And it was weird because Wembley was like 3 octaves higher than the normal roar that you would hear.
Yeah.
And we thought, oh, we'll just go to the shopping outlet sort of thing and just like hang around for a few hours. So I think, and it all shuts at about 8:30. So we spent most of the evening just sat in the car because there was nowhere else to go. We went to the Brent Cross as well, which is just down the road, isn't it?
Yeah, and Brent Cross is rubbish, though. That's just like Westfield. You may as well be a Derby, mate.
Yeah.
But, no, it's
other than if you call somebody Duck in Brent Cross, you probably get knifed.
They expect you to throw something. Yeah, you know, I was in London for a few years, and I love London. I'll always love London. It will always feel like a second home to me. And then when I first moved there, I thought, I don't know if this will ever feel like home. And then by the end, it really did. But if I were to do it again, I'd have to live probably like a little bit more in amongst it. Because while I loved being in Wembley, it was mainly about living in that flat with those memories with Hamza. My team, because my dad's a Londoner, my team Spurs moved to Wembley when we were living there. So we had 3 years where we were like in the Champions League, like, roll out of bed and get into the stadium, like could always get a ticket. It was a dream. But if I were to do it again, like what I love about being in Bristol now is that not only can I get up to the UK guitar show in just over an hour, I can also, it's just like you can really feel the community aspect of it. It's a good size, like there's loads going on. It's obviously a very creative city, loads of visual artists, musical artists, like it's cool, very accepting place. But there's enough going on, but it doesn't feel like you're getting lost in it. Whereas London kind of, there's an element of that, like, unless you're living in a, in a locale where that you've got your little community, it's going to take you like an hour and a half to get anywhere, and you spend so much on travel and that. Whereas, yeah, Bristol just feels like a good size for me at this point.
I taught at BIM Bristol because Birmingham didn't exist at the time, and because of where I live, it's only like an hour down the motorway to get there. And I used to teach this module where the students had to put on gigs at the end of the year. And, you know, I'd have like 60 students and they'd be in teams of three putting on these gigs. So I'd have to go to 20 gigs. And what... I know.
That's mad.
Yeah. But what impressed me more than in Birmingham, which is, you know, where I used to gig, that I went to 20 different venues, which you can't do that in Birmingham anymore. There's not 20 venues left. Mm. But Bristol had got this really vibrant... sort of like scene for up and coming artists. And I went to some really cool venues. I also went to like watch a gig at bowling alley and stuff like that. It was just kind of, it's a much more musical city.
Yeah. I was at the bowling alley last night, actually. Was it Lanes? Is that where you saw
Lanes,
the gig?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was there for, well, one of my friend, Jim Molyneux, great musician. He's East London. He plays for a DJ. He plays drums for a DJ called Barry Can't Swim. So we were at that down at SWX. That was a great night. Well, Jim's an interesting one because he grew up on like traditional folk. He then studied, I want to say jazz because he's a wicked jazz pianist. And now he plays for like DJs. And that's what I love about, like, he's my age, but he's kind of down with the kids because he's down in East London and he's playing all these cool sessions. But what I love about the kids coming through now, like we were talking about how listening habits have changed. One of the positives from like the digital revolution that's obviously got many controversies and negatives, I would say. But one of the positives is that the kids now, they will in one sitting happily go from grime to electronic to acoustic to rock. And I think that's wicked, and Bristol feels like that in microcosm, because yes, there's a strong traditional folk little niche little core that I was on about, one of the strongest in the country, I'd argue maybe the strongest in the country, which is cool for like fiddle players, accordion players, whatever, like niche stuff that I grew up on and love. But by the same token, that crowd will happily go to a funk night, will happily go to a blues night, and that's great. And coming from a town in the Midlands, you wouldn't really have that in Chesterfield. It was like indie or you go to the folk club with your grandparents. It's like there wasn't anything in between, really. So that's something that I love about this city.
And we should touch on it because like you'd have gone to a folk club with your parents, potentially, who you've said are both musicians.
Mm.
And I'm assuming that I've seen your dad play multiple times, because in my 20s, so 30 years ago, I went to the Cropperty Folk Festival for like nine years running.
Yeah, you'd have seen Dad 100%. I grew up at that festival, essentially. Like I went every year for years. But my partner's festival, the Magpies Festival that I was on about, it's the same weekend. And it's the only festival on the same weekend because everyone else stays away from that festival because it's the biggest folk festival.
Yeah.
So that's the reason that she picked it, because it's like, oh, actually it's kind of Cropperty's the only one to worry about, so we do it. But then like a year later she's now ensconced within that Fairport family through me and Dad, and it's just funny, but my allegiances are fully with the Magpies. But you probably will have seen Dad at Cropperty because that my dad was in the original lineup of Fairport Convention, but they invite old members back to come back and play. So yeah, it's a nice one. Cropperty's a really nice one. Did you have a good time there?
Well, I mean, I went for 9 years. I'm not a big fan of folk music per se, but I really like that. Certainly in my 20s, I really like that festival. I remember one of the most frightening experiences. Let's just say I was a little bit under the influence.
Yeah.
Was when Roy Wood came out and did I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day with Fake Snow Falling on the stage, which completely blew my mind.
What, in the middle of summer?
In the middle of August,
that's brilliant, yeah.
I went a couple of years ago.
Oh, nice.
And I went because Trevor Horn was playing.
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
And I do a podcast with Marillion's lead singer, who got up and did a couple of songs that night with Trevor. Because
is that Trevor's Fish?
Up. No, that isn't. Fish left in 1988, but it's fine. It's a guy called Steve Hogarth, who joined in 1989.
Cool.
I won't mention it. It's not really still a bugbear to him that he's been a new singer for 35 years.
It was before my time, forgive me. It was before my time.
But Steve's done a couple of these albums that Trevor's done reimagined in 80s tracks.
Mm.
And he was on stage that night with Trev. And Lowell Cream always plays with that band as well. And he's a lovely fella as well. But what a lovely festival.
It was
just such a beautiful... I think Clad were on that night. They were on that night. Toya was there with Hubby, because Robert was playing.
Mm.
And it was just such a really, really special kind of... I mean, provided you don't have a problem with those Twizzly beers and the long wizard
tankards and wizard hats.
It's the pewter tankards and the leather hats.
I'm immune to that shit.
And the off-road sandals.
Crocs. I draw the line at Crocs. There's a particular crowd, yeah. Yeah. And I would never...
They're your people, aren't they?
No, I mean, that is maybe a step too far. What I would say is I can peacefully coexist with them. I've learned to.
This morning I listened to the podcast, the first episode of the podcast you did with your dad.
Oh, yeah.
The governor.
Yeah.
And really interesting going back to his sort of like, it starts at the end of the Second World War when he was born, doesn't it?
Mm.
But there was one thing, and just one thing that really stood out for me, was that he said, "You've got over 100 football shirts."
Yeah.
And I was like, 100?
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, and I've bought more since that interview as well.
You're not a hoarder. You're not a hoarder.
Sure. Well, at least that you know where I got it from. That's all I'll say on that.
To be fair, that's a collection. If it's football shirts, it's a collection, you're fine.
It's a collection, it's all right, yeah. It's like Hornby. No, I don't have any Hornby. No, I'm a football nerd, yeah. Like I said, Spurs fan, but obviously, like, Chesterfield fan, growing up in the area. But more than anything, I would say I'm a fan of... I'm just showing you my tattoos now. Real Betis from Sevilla and Fiorentina from Florence. And don't ask me why. I'm just a nerd for continental football.
Real Betis, green and white stripes.
Very good. Yeah, I was wearing the shirt earlier, but then I didn't want to get it mucky when I was eating, so I took it off. good knowledge, though. Yeah, Betis. And Seville... A ridiculous city. If you ever get a chance to go to Andalusia,
the more I learn about you, you know, Blair, the more, because we talked a bit at the beginning about the fact that you were in your early 30s and you didn't have any kids. But there's no kids needed in your house, are there, really? Because by the sounds of things, you leave junk everywhere. You're all over the place in terms of your habits, and you can't eat anything without spilling it down your front.
I wish Holly could hear this, because she'd be like literally agreeing with you.
There's just no kids required.
No,
literally no kids.
I am a kid. Yeah. And we're getting to that age though. We were saying like 32. Like, God, I'm not ready for that. I'm not ready for that.
I don't think anyone's ever ready.
No, if you wait till you're ready, you'll just never have them, right?
Yeah. But you can never afford them.
No.
Well, I mean, I guess there's affording it. I bet I could afford it more than what I could afford it now. But, yeah.
Well, you just have to stop buying junk guitars off Amazon Marketplace. That shit stops for a few years, yeah.
Anyway, 45 minutes into a conversation for us that normally lasts 45 minutes, shall we talk about actually what you do? Because we haven't once, really, apart from a lit in the album, talked about how... What got you to being a singer-songwriter? What have you done in between? Was this what you were always going to do? Are you a failed vet? By the way, I can't see you as a failed vet, but you know what I mean.
Failed footballer. 100% failed footballer. But
you still try as well, don't you?
I do, man. Yeah, well, yeah, I was fuming because we were doing the... We were doing the video shoot that I was on about, and we overran, and it meant that I missed Monday night football. We played five-a-side up the road. And there's a load of musos as well, so the standard's, like, not that good. We, like, all fancy ourselves
excel?
As, like,
do you shine in that crowd?
I would say, yeah. I would say I think I've been playing at too high a level my whole life, and actually, like, moving down a level is, like, that's the one, isn't it? Just, like, be one of the better players within, like, a shitter group. That's the way.
Are you Paul Merson at Portsmouth, then? Is that where you've landed?
Do you know
now?
What? Because I have got a dodgy knee as well. Like, that is the level I mean, I wish you'd have used someone who wasn't an ex-Arsenal player as an example, but I do think it's a good parallel. yeah, I would say Baggio at Brescia. Roberto Baggio at Brescia, I would say. And I have got that shirt. And I have got that shirt in long sleeve.
I mentioned it because I saw Merson play in the end of his career at Bramall Lane, and he, a little bit podgy, but he played with a smile on his face, and he was wonderful for that game. He was absolutely wonderful. He didn't move very far, but his range of passing was, you know, he still moved the ball beautifully, but he just played with a smile, and it was absolutely lovely. So I'm seeing you playing with a smile.
I fancy myself as that. But yeah, I mean, to actually talk about I keep digressing, don't I? I'm enjoying the chat. You can edit it, it's all good. I would have loved to have been a footballer, but I was never anywhere near good enough. But music is the first thing that kind of captured me, aside from Thomas the Tank Engine. And I think my mum bought me a Fisher-Price recorder, like a tape recorder, like a little boxy thing. And apparently I just, like, went everywhere with that. I used to sleep with it and, like, record and then play stuff back. And so the fact that I'm now producing records, like doing Holly and George's record. I don't know if I mentioned, maybe I mentioned it before we started recording, but they're called Painted Sky. They're a duo who are opening for me on my spring tour, the album tour. But I produced a couple of records for Dad over lockdown, then started doing, like, demos and stuff. Like for myself at home and experimenting, and then I just produced the Painted Sky record, and it's almost like I was always destined to not only play music but record music, because I was inseparable from this flipping Fisher Price recorder. And it's like, when as soon as I got the album in the can, I was chatting to Mum about it, and she was like, yeah, well, you remember that record? I was like, maybe I was, like, always destined to go into production. And I'm enjoying that side of things, like, massively. But I was always the annoying guitar kid, you know, at the party at school. Like, I like to think I wasn't as insufferable as the image that you have of that tragic guy who tries to woo everyone in the corner. Like, I like to think I just had the guitar there and people asked me to play. But I was quite, which they did, but I was very happy to play. Like, I've always enjoyed sing-arounds and collaborating and playing with other people, and that was always it for me. I started playing guitar at 6. Like I said, Dad, musician all his life, Mum, teacher, but great singer. I'd like to think that I've got more of my mum's voice than my dad's voice, and he'd agree with that. But kind of grew up around it, grew up at sound checks, and grew up going to lots of gigs and folk clubs, and being dragged to folk clubs as well, because I was only interested in indie. Like, I was into, like, Oasis or whatever, and then kind of discovered traditional music in my late teens largely through the guy I mentioned earlier, who's just produced my new album, Jim Murray. He was the first, like, traditional artist that really, like, pushed the envelope, and he was, like, doing something cool with it, you know, much like what people would have said Fairport Convention were doing with it in the 60s, but he was doing it for my generation. So I kind of got into traditional music through that, and then started detuning my guitar and playing in different tunings, like Dadgad, Open C, C-Sus 2, which is a great one, which is like Open C, but the top E down to a D. If you've ever played in Open C, I would recommend trying doing that, because that's great. But started, like, messing around with tunings, and then that's when I got, like, exponentially better, because from, like, 16 to 18, I kind of locked myself away at school, and just, like, any spare moment, I would just be playing guitar, and That's when I got better. I was like adequate until then. Then I got loads better when I like started messing around with tunings. Just, I don't know why. But
You say you were into indie and stuff like that. Actually, having listened to your album this morning, you can hear it. It's not like you sound like an Oasis album or anything. But actually, I mean, I suppose we're all just a sum of what we've listened to in the past. And particularly the new single. Is it out?
Let's Get Out of the City. Yeah, that is indie. It is indie, and it's an indie track. Yeah, I feel like this album is definitely... I'm just like shedding all the preconceptions and just like I said, after having a few years off with COVID and that, it's made us all reevaluate what we want. And I just don't care anymore about if something fits into X box or Y box. Like that, what I love about playing in North America and Australia is that their definition of folk is much broader.
Mm.
And whereas here you picture like fingers in the ears, like sea shanties kind of thing. There's certain connotations with that in North America. In Europe as well, when I play, there's a great festival in Denmark called Turner that I played at. And that's like, just like talking folk festivals, that's on point. Loads of Celtic, loads of world music, loads of Americans, bluegrass singer-songwriters, bits of blues, bits of jazz. Like that is for me, that's a folk festival. And that's what, playing abroad, like what I loved about that was that one, no one cared who my dad was, which was nice because a lot of the UK folk festivals, like people know about Fairport and then that's like a thing and it's like you spend ages trying to like shed that.
Mm.
No one cares, no one knows, no one cares in abroad, and that was cool. And then I went down better there than I've ever gone down here, partly maybe because of that and I felt a bit freer, but then also partly, like I said, because their definition of folk is broader and it encapsulates singer-songwriters, elements of country, elements of blues. It's just a much broader, it's more like roots music, in air quotes, in general. That's like their folk. And the kind of troubadour, the songsmith, do you know what I mean? That's a thing there. And that suits me down to the ground. And so with this album, I'm kind of channeling that. I'm channeling the energy of when I've played abroad and had those tours where I just don't care whether the traditional English scene are going to like it, whether, you know, the Celtic scene are going to like it, whether, you know, there's all these subsects in English folk. And while it's amazing and that's how they preserve many of the traditions, it can feel stifling for someone like me who doesn't quite fit into any of the subsects. So with this album, I'm just leaning into the country. There's pedal steel on it. I'm leaning into the indie. You know, Jim told me to up the tempo on Let's Get Out of the City, that single.
Mm.
And when we laid it down, it was like, Jesus. Like, it took me literally like until the last couple of mixes, like it took me till it essentially went off to master for it to feel right at that tempo, because I'd played it live for the best part of a year, 20 BPM slower than that. But you know what? You hire a producer, you listen to the producer. That's what I'm in the business of now. Like, I'm not going to just be too pig-headed to listen to him because I rate him and I trust him. Same with the video stuff. You know, I rate Hayley and Kieran. I'm going to trust their vision for it. You know, I do my job, you do your job, and treat it as a collaboration. And that's really cool because Jim forced me to up the speed of that tune and he was 100% right. And I wouldn't have had the balls to do that before. And sometimes you just got to be open to pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. And I think, I wouldn't necessarily say it's my most interesting songs, like lyrically. In the past, I've written more detailed and complex songs lyrically, but this album is definitely more like sonically and including everything, it's more cohesive. It's the best album I've ever made. My voice sounds better than it's ever sounded. The production sounds great. And the initial response from like close friends and other musicians that I've shared it with is kind of mirroring that. And I'm definitely feeling unshackled, and that's really cool.
I think there's I was listening to it, and I think it is that HA9 song.
Yeah, Brick on Brick. Yeah, I call it HA. I'll always call it HA9. But
and I thought, this sounds like Jason Isbell, which is like the highest compliment I can actually pay anyone. I mean that guitar that's hanging behind the Ant that you can see the Telecaster is an Isbell Telecaster. We're like complete Isbell look. Obsessives.
Oh, he's awesome. Yeah, Jason's a mate, just amazing artist. Underrated guitarist as well. Like, obviously wicked songwriter, but like proper guitarist as well.
Yeah,
that's nice. That is, I'm looking
at it. The only other thing, well, I've got two things left that we should probably talk about.
Yeah.
One, which I think we should finish with, which is when we talk about the acting, just because that's quite, it's just so unique and weird.
It's funny, but then
And the only other thing, you talk about collaborations. I'm a massive fan of Larkin Poe, and you did like an EP with them. How did that come about?
Yeah, that was cool. So Larkin Poe, so if you don't know Larkin Poe, you check them out because they're amazing. But Rebecca and Megan, two sisters from Georgia, and they started out in a bluegrass scene with their third sister, little known fact, who played the fiddle, and Megan played slide, so she started on dobro, and then Rebecca played mandolin. Rebecca's a ridiculous mandolin player, and as I kind of got to work with them, I was kind of into that Americana, acoustic Americana at the time, and bluegrass, and we just kind of went to see them at a gig and then got chatting, and then ended up collaborating, and we recorded an EP together, and they played on my first album, and we just hung out for a bit, and it was great, and I think the world of them, and they're great. And then they changed massively, really. They went from all the way from kind of like dobro mandolin to lap steel and like driven electric guitars, and they're kind of swamp rock now. But at the latest Grammys, they just won. I can't remember what they won.
Oh, their best blues album of 2023 or something, wasn't it? Man.
And do you know what? They deserve it so much, because I've never known anyone, first of all, so talented, like just dripping with talent, particularly Rebecca as a frontwoman. Like, Megan's playing is very special, and there's something amazing about Megan's musicality. But, and the pair of them together, amazing sibling harmonies. But, you know, Megan's musicality and Rebecca's kind of craftsmanship as a front woman, just like off the chain, like just dripping with talent, but also like super hardworking and driven, like super on it. And like, I've never met anyone in my life where I thought you're destined to be successful.
I think they are the complete package, because they're really talented, but they're very photogenic as well, which makes it a lot easier for magazines, news outlets to carry stuff about them.
Yeah, too right. Yeah, yeah.
I took my daughter to see them, and I really, my daughter was 15 at the time, I think. And like, you know, she's grown up listening to like Ariana Grande and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know, like teenage girls do.
Yeah,
and I was actually, it was a gig ticket that was purchased before COVID, but obviously we got to see them like 3 years after, sort of thing. And the mate that I was going with couldn't make it because the date wasn't free, so I took my daughter, and I just wanted to show her that you can be utterly awesome on a stage, without wearing high heels and miniskirts and all of that. And she was blown away, and she went mental at the merch stall afterwards. And I was just like, go for it, kid. For it.
Yeah, they're super inspirational. They're amazing musicians. And Rebecca's husband's an amazing guitarist. Oh, actually, Megan's husband's an amazing guitarist as well. So Rebecca's husband, Tyler Bryant and the Shakedown, wicked band. He's wicked. I don't know him at all, but he's an incredible guitarist. And Megan's husband, who... they were together when we were touring like years and years ago, and I never met Mike. I think he played on a couple of the first Larkin Poe EPs. Maybe he played with the Lovell sisters when they were doing acoustic, but probably not though, because he only played electric and they were like flat picking the bluegrass stuff like when they were teenagers. But Mike Seale's incredible because he only plays finger style, but he plays like shreddy, jazzy, bluesy, chopsy stuff, but only like finger pick. So yeah, check out Mike Seale's playing as well. Check out Tyler Bryant, but check out Mike Seale. I think Rhett Schull, wicked guitarist, YouTuber, he did a thing on Mike recently, and I know that, I think they're all based around the same, maybe they're all Georgia or Nashville maybe now, but I've seen there's been a bit of crossover between them two, and it's really cool to see because I really like Rhett's videos. So maybe they're all kind of linking up and hanging out because Tyler's been on, Rebecca and Megan have been on, and then he did a massive thing on Mike Seal, who's just a session guy. He's not really known as an artist in his own right, but it was great to see him showcased by such a massive YouTube channel. Because I've been a fan of Mike's playing through knowing Rebecca, through knowing Megan, for all those years. So yeah, check out all of those guitarists. There's some killers in America. There's some absolute killers in America. Yeah.
We should just finish because we did mention it very briefly at the start. You talked about your acting career.
Yeah.
Willy Wonka.
Tim Burton's Willy Wonka. Yeah, man. How about that? Yeah, it's just mad, really. I never like acted at all growing up. I never thought it was something I would be like good at. And then just our drama teacher at school like knew someone who was casting for the film because it was such a big production. The remake of, you know, Willy Wonka, Tim Burton, Johnny Depp, and my dad's a Christopher Lee, so like Dracula and just like loads of legends. And such a big budget Warner Brothers job that they cast in like all around the world, presumably, and particularly in the UK. So it was like, yeah, our drama teacher says you can have like the afternoon off school, and like 20 boys and 20 girls went for parts of Charlie Bucket and Veruca Salt's The Spoilt Kid. And we didn't know if it was legit or not. We were like, there was a camera set up, but we just thought we had the afternoon off school. So we were like, yeah, cool. And then did my bit, like pretending, like literally wasn't acting. I was like pretending because I had no conception of what to act was. And yeah, I just kept getting called back. So I got called back like 3 or 4 times. And then,
so you were Willy Wonka.
So I went for the part of Charlie and then didn't get the part of Charlie. I got down to the last two, kept going down to London for these like auditions. And then by the time you're in the last 20 or whatever, it's all like professional child actors. And I was just like taking the afternoon off school, like, what's going on? And then I got down to the last two, had a one-on-one screen test with Tim Burton at Pinewood Studios, like just completely randomly. Like, it was like either of you two getting it. It was just so random. And then didn't get the part. So Freddie Highmore got the part, and he'd already acted with Johnny Depp in Finding Neverland the year before. So it made sense. Like, it was a much safer bet than this kid who's like never done anything before. But apparently he liked me. So he wanted me to be in the film. So he gave me the part of young Willy Wonka in the flashback. So if you remember the remake, there's like the kid who's not allowed to eat sweets and he's got a head brace on. And his dad's like a dentist and he's really mean. And that's Sir Christopher Lee. And I'm the kid with the braces on. So I'm young Johnny Depp, I guess.
Yeah, you are young Johnny Depp. I mean, come on, look at the people that play Willy Wonka. Gene Wilder, Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp, Timothy Chalamet, Blair Dunlop. Thank you very much. I should be having a go, actually. They didn't give me a call. They clearly think somehow that Timothy Chalamet sells more tickets at box office than I do. But I don't know where they got that from.
I bet he ain't got a strat on his kitchen table.
I bet he doesn't have a 40 quid strat on his kitchen table. But apparently Johnny Depp plays Duesenbergs. Apparently Johnny
he does,
Depp
yeah.
has nice guitars, yeah. So, and he was lovely to me. I know there's a lot of stuff going around about Johnny Depp. I can only speak from experience, but everyone on set like loved him. And he's a big music fan, obviously, so I don't know. But yeah, what an experience. Like, yeah, I mean, I pinched myself, but it was cool getting the acting chops out for the music video the other day. I was like, do you know what? I could get back into this. But it's I think the thing is that when it's music, like, you're willing to do the shit gigs because you love it. Like, I will play anywhere and everywhere. As long as I'm making the music I want to make and I feel that I'm improving as an artist, I'm there. Like, I'm good. With acting, yes, it was fun being... And they call you the hero because they're like, oh, can we get a hero shot? And that's like, means that the protagonist is like, you know, it's close up on the protagonist. So I can see why people's heads go mad. but, you know, really fun doing my own music video as, you know, the hero. But if I, you know, and, you know, if it was a really cool script for some gritty drama or like got a feature film, then great. Am I willing to go and tread the boards and go and do pantos and stuff and do adverts? I'm probably not, like, realistically, just because my heart's not in it as much. So from that standpoint, I would be foolish, even though I've still got an amazing credit on my CV. And a lot of the people that I meet who, you know, went to drama school with my best mate and that part of that crowd with Hayley, who, you know, and the director from the music video, a lot of those people had killed to have that credit on their CV. But ultimately, I'd be foolish to think that I could just waltz back into the industry and just pick up where I left off, because it's a really hard industry, and, you know, for all its faults, and, you know, we could list them for a long time, maybe that's something for another podcast. for all the music industry's faults, I can go out with a guitar on my back, or maybe two in my dual guitar case that I just bought, and just play a gig and set up in the middle of town and play to people walking by, or play at a folk club or at a venue or at a festival. And I'm my own boss in that sense. And that's really beautiful. And I'm very fortunate that I've been able to just do that all my career. Like, it's not lost on me. And to, you know, come and do things like the UK Guitar Show, that people want to come and watch me play guitar, sing my songs, it's just a dream. And I genuinely wouldn't change it for anything.
Well, I think we can probably wrap it up there and wish you all the very best with the new tour and the new album. I think I'm coming to see you on the 1st of May in Birmingham.
Kitchen Garden.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lovely venue. I love that. King's Heath, good spot. Amazing. Well, yeah, hope to see you there. And like I say, thanks for inviting me for the show. It was absolutely wicked. I had the best time. And hopefully we can do that again as well.
Definitely. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to 9 to 42, the podcast from the team at the Guitar Show UK. If you've enjoyed the show, then please remember to hit the subscribe button and share with other like-minded souls. For more information about 9 to 42, please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at the Guitar Show UK. This has been an A Short Stories production.